When we think of a shepherd, the word shepherd, at least in the King James Version, is not used as it pertains to church leaders in the New Testament. It uses the word pastor in Ephesians 4, where it talks about gave some apostles and prophets, pastors, teachers, evangelists. Pastor comes from the same word as shepherd comes from. And I think there are different terms used in New Testament that we as church leaders serve as under shepherds is a biblical concept. It talks about feed the flock of God. But it also talks about Christ as the chief shepherd. We don't take his place, but we serve under him. And I think to call church leaders under shepherds is a biblical concept. But I'd like to look at the heart of a shepherd, and especially looking at Jesus Christ as the chief shepherd, and maybe to some degree, as we look at Christ, it is the perfect model and an ideal, and I don't mean to lift it up in a way that discourages you because we cannot attain to that same level, but it's something to aspire towards. So, I'll be reading John chapter 10, verses 1 through 18. Just invite you to stand for the reading of that scripture if you care to. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. Then said Jesus unto them again, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth. And the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father. You may be seated. So Jesus here is told a brief parable, verses 1 through 5. And it says, the people didn't understand. What are you saying, Jesus? And he explained it to them. Now, as we look at these verses, there are different components that we can zero in on. Who is the porter? Who are the sheep? Etc. But I'd like to focus in on Jesus as the good shepherd. It clearly states it in the explanation. Jesus says he's two things. I am the door, and I am the good shepherd. And so I'd like to focus in on the shepherd. And there are sort of four points that I'd like to bring out. The first one is, the good shepherd acts out of who he is. The doing out of being. We do because we are. And notice, well, get to that later. The second point is, he knows his sheep. In one place it says, in verse 14, he knows his sheep. And in verse 3, it says, he calls them by name. So sort of two aspects of knowing them. And the third point, he goes before them. He's out front. And the fourth point is the point of humility. It's not as clear here, except just sort of an underlying thing of, Jesus walked a life of humility. He gives his life for the sheep. It's not a self-centered focus. And so I'd like to talk a little bit, doing out of being. Jesus acted the way he did because that's who he was. He was the good shepherd. And see the difference between that and the hireling. Why did the hireling flee? Because that's who he was. He was an hireling. He wasn't the shepherd. And so we act and we do out of who we are. We can put on a front and deceive at least some people some of the time. But eventually, who we are comes out in how we live, how we interact, what we do. And so how did Jesus act? And I'd like to look a bit at John chapter 13. This is often read at communion when it comes to the foot washing service. And I'd like for you to remember, Jesus here is acting out of who he is when he washes his disciples' feet. And I'd like to look at a number of things here in this portion. John 13, starting in verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God. I'd like to pause there just briefly. Jesus knew that his hour was come. He was fully aware of the timing of this event and what was about to happen in the next 24 hours. Being fully aware of his death being at hand. In Luke 22, it talks about, with desire I have desired. It's with a fervent desire he wants this time with his followers to commemorate the communion, that which symbolized his death, his suffering. And in this time, he gives us some object lessons to learn from. One was the bread, the other the cup, and the third is the washing of feet. And he says, he loved them unto the end. I want to demonstrate my love to you, my disciples, up until the very end, even to Judas, the one who was going to betray him just shortly. Jesus demonstrated love to him to the end. How could he do it? It's because of who he was. He was the good shepherd. Now, the heart of a shepherd, there are some similarities to that and the heart of a servant. There are some different dynamics, but there's some overlap as well. A shepherd is also a servant, as we think of servant leadership. But a shepherd has some interesting dynamics that maybe is a little bit different than just a servant look. But Jesus loved his own unto the end. Judas had previously agreed with the chief priest to betray him in exchange for 30 pieces of silver. and he was just looking for the right opportunity to do it. And Jesus knew it. And still he loved him. Jesus is saying, all things are given into my hands. I'm not sure what all is included in the all things there. But I think he's saying the course and destination of mankind is committed to me right here. It's given into my care. The administration of the kingdom of God, he's recognizing he is the rightful son and heir of all things. Jesus knew where he came from, and he knew where he was going. And he was secure in that relationship with his Father. I came from God with a mission. I will fulfill it. And so with that knowledge, he gets ready. In verse 4, he rises from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel, and girded himself. And again, I'd like to interrupt here a little bit with a few verses in Mark 10. Jesus here says, "Ye know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. But so shall it not be among you. But whosoever will be great among you shall be your minister. And whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many." That was the mission of Jesus Christ, who is the Good Shepherd. He came to minister, or to serve, not to be served. And he demonstrates that so well here in John 13. And in verse 5, "After that he poureth water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus saith to him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. Now when Jesus came to serve, serving does not mean that you give to people just what they want all the time, but you give them what they need. That is true service. You as parents, do you give your children everything they want? I hope not. They'll be spoiled children if you do. And so how do you serve them? It's by giving some direction and guidelines and not just catering to all their whims. And Jesus didn't either. Think especially of the account in Luke 12:13, where this one man came to Jesus and says, Jesus, can you make my brother divide the inheritance with me? Well, Jesus didn't even really address the issue of inheritance, but he gave something that this man was needing, and he taught about covetousness. What was the need? The need was a heart condition, and Jesus spoke to the need, but he didn't give him what he wanted. And here in this account of washing the feet, Jesus didn't just do what Peter wanted. And I think Peter is just sort of aghast. Here is the one who I have proclaimed as, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And here he's stooping down to wash my feet. And he's, can just sort of picture him throwing up his hands and, never, this can't be. This is a reversal of roles. And I just can't allow it. But Jesus, he doesn't just give in to what Peter is asking for. And he tells him, Peter, you don't understand everything that's happening right now. If you don't let me wash your feet, you don't have any part of me. And so Peter sort of goes to the other extreme, and I'm not sure what all is contained in that. Well, not just my feet, but do it to my hands and my head as well. And I think Christ is coming back and saying, Peter, stop trying to take control of this situation. Let me be in charge. I'm here to serve you. Just let me do it. I know what I'm doing. And so we don't read exactly what all happened, but I would understand that Peter gave in and allowed Jesus to wash his feet. And in verse 12, so after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments and was set down again, he said unto them, know ye what I have done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. I think Jesus is saying here, I am the Master, I am the Lord, and if I in that role have stooped and served you, then you as servants should be doing that to each other. And Jesus clearly says, you're happy if you go ahead and do them. Now, in this example, I think it's Jesus, by example, had been demonstrating something to them over the years of teaching, and it sort of climaxes here with this idea of servant leadership. Yes, I am your master, but I am serving you. And if I, as your master, serve, then follow that example of servant leadership. And I think later, when in Peter, 1 Peter 5, it talks about that, how Peter encourages, submit to one another, work together. And he wasn't lifting himself up as, I am the apostle Peter, listen to me. But he addresses the other elders as a fellow elder, as coming from a fellow elder. And so the heart of a shepherd is a man who serves. Now, interestingly enough, just prior to the feet washing that we read about in John 13, there is another feet washing in John 12. And this is where the woman comes and anoints the feet of Jesus. It's Mary takes a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anoints the feet of Jesus, wipes his feet with her hair, and the house is filled with this excellent aroma. And the disciples are pretty disgruntled about it. So how does this compare with the feet washing, the other feet washing? And, you know, there's some pretty, it's very different dynamics here. But I think the security that Jesus had in his relationship with the Father could accept this extravagant display of loyalty from the woman as being very right. It's appropriate. But that same relationship enabled him to stoop down in humility and wash the disciples' feet as well. And it demonstrate extravagant loyalty and love in that way. Jesus is the good shepherd, and he simply acted out of who he was. And we need to do the same. If we don't have the heart of a shepherd, then we won't act like a shepherd. We do out of who we are. I'd like to look a little bit at he knows them by name. in verse 3 of John chapter 10. It talks about he calleth his own sheep by name. And in verse 14, I am the good shepherd and know my sheep. Can we know our congregations in the way that Jesus knew his disciples or other people? And I quickly say, no, we don't know the hearts of men in the way that Jesus does. But I think it's something to strive for, to know our people as best as we can. We can't always know the intentions and motives of those in our congregations the way Jesus does, but we pastors need to put forth effort to know those that we are responsible for. So how do we know the people in our congregation? Mike, how do you know the people? Dwight, how do you know the congregation back at center? And you know, sometimes I just realize there are people that I don't know very well. I wish I'd know them better. And it's something I want to put forth more effort to. This message was not to come and preach for at you as much as, boy, it brought personal conviction of how I think I need to spend more time one-to-one with some people and just knowing more about their life, how they're doing, what motivates them. But in order to know others, we also need to be willing to make ourselves known to them and make ourselves vulnerable. And that's not always easy. But I think just simply being open with my struggles opens the door for others to be open with their struggles for me and let me know them. And when we do have the trust of people and they come to us with their issues, we don't have to have all the answers. Sometimes all they need is a listening ear, and you get to know their heart. Sometimes we see actions, and it's quick to make some judgment calls on this is wrong, this is right, based on actions, and we don't take the time to, especially if it's something that we don't think it's a right action, we don't take the time to, so why did they act that way? And I'd encourage you, when you approach a brother or a sister who has acted, maybe it's an inappropriate action, but if you go and ask why, it can help you understand the background. It may not make the action right, but it can give you empathy for the person of why it led to this action and show that you care. Doesn't mean you have to justify right or don't have to justify wrong actions, but show that you care and listen to the story behind it. And I think it's okay to just share this, that I know enough of you. There are hurting people sitting in the congregation here tonight. And we have those at center as well, back at home. And it's probably a two-way thing. For one thing, as a hurting person, can I be open with someone about the hurts that I have faced? And the other part is, can I be trusted with hurting people coming to me and telling my story? We need to have safe people to go to talk. We're not going to make ourselves vulnerable with someone who we know is, or we know, that we're afraid will go and tell so-and-so about what I'm talking about. Hold the confidence of people. Guard it carefully. And saying that there are hurting people here, I would say every one of us has experienced hurt. and we're at different stages in how we have processed the hurts. And so just encourage you, it's okay to hurt, but find solutions for it. And often it comes by verbalizing to someone to help us work through it. A familiar saying, I don't know that I have it word for word, but people don't care how much you know, they want to know how much you care. And have that heart of caring. Have a shepherd's heart in that. Know your people. And it's taking an interest in the people. And when you're interested in a person, while you want to get to know them, sometimes a good place to start is simply know what are their hobbies, what are their interests, what do they enjoy doing, what is life giving to them? And that can open the door for further conversations. Look out for the well-being of others. Don't be self-centered. Be other people-oriented. Third point, he goeth before them. In verse 3, it talks about the shepherd, he leadeth them out. And in verse 4, when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them. Going before them puts one in a bit of a vulnerable position. You're not just right in the middle of the flock, but you're going before them. You're leading the way. I'd like to use the chalkboard just a little bit here. There are different types of church leadership. One is, I'll just use the example of Catholicism. We have the Pope up here. There are cardinals under here. Under the cardinals, you know what they have? Bishops. Who's under the bishops?
Priests.
Who's under the priests? The common people. And so it's sort of an hierarchy of leadership. The Pope is at the top. There are other models. One would be where we have a board of elders who does the hiring and firing of the pastor. Have the pastor in here. And under the pastor, then, we have the common people. I didn't come up with these models, and I'm not sure who gave them where I saw them. But so those are some models. But does it look biblical? Do those models look biblical to you? Well, just to say that one, they're 100% wrong. I'm not there. But I don't think it's the ideal model for us. And I would rather have the model where we have Jesus Christ demonstrating it, where he is here and he's got people out around him. He's sort of in the front. He's leading the way. He's influencing the direction, but he's rubbing shoulders with the people. He's walking with them. And I think that is what I would see as a biblical model for us in church leadership. We walk with the people. But it's still going before. It is sort of giving direction for the church. It's leading out. It is a vulnerable position. In 2 Corinthians 12, Paul is talking here, and I think it sort of demonstrates this in verse 14 and 15. It says, "Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome for you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And I will very gladly spend and be spent for you. Though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved." And in that role, Jesus was looking out for the welfare of those he was walking with. He was giving of his resources to help other people. And Paul says here, in a similar way, I seek not yours. Now, this yours here, I seek not yours, I think it's referring to the people's resources. It's talking about providing financially and so on. And he's saying, I'm not after your money. I'm after you. I care about you. I want you. And then in verse 15, I will very gladly spend and be spent for you. I think that's simply saying, I'm willing to give of my resources for the well-being of my fellow man. That's what I get out of this. And then it says, I'm not sure, the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. There are times when church leaders, I think, face elements of that. When you're in church leadership, it's probably a matter of time when you say something that gets misunderstood. And it feels like you can't say it right enough at times. It's okay. In those times, be willing to continue to give, even if you don't feel the love in return. Still love the people and care for them and give of yourself and your resources. When you go ahead of them in a Christ-like way, I think that's a biblical model. I think we all have heard of or maybe even experienced church dynamics that have been unhealthy, where it felt like maybe the leadership was behind and driving and forcing people and a flock in a direction versus going in front and leading the way and using their position more as a role of control and power. And I don't see Jesus doing that. He was not wishy-washy on issues. He led with clarity, but it was not a position of coercion, but it was a position that he used to empower others to live effectively for the kingdom of God. And that is what we want to strive for. In one way, where Jesus demonstrated how being in that role is a vulnerable position is in his arrest. It was when right after the prayer of Gethsemane, it says, Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, which was Judas Iscariot and the people coming to arrest him. And he asked, whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus saith unto them, I am he. You know what happened? They all stumbled backwards and fell down. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Then asked he them again, whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, let these go their way. Now there's an example of going before them is a vulnerable and sometimes dangerous place. Jesus didn't step back into the middle of the disciples right then. He stepped out in front. You're seeking me, here I am, but let these people go. And that's sometimes a position that godly church leaders need to take, stepping out in front, being willing to take the brunt of whatever's coming, but spare the people. Go before them. And again, in going before them, it's not distancing yourself from the people, but it's leading, giving direction, and influencing and empowering the people that you are rubbing shoulders with, giving direction. And the last point, just briefly, the need of humility. In Matthew 5:3, the first of the Beatitudes, who can quote it? Blessed are the... What's the first Beatitude? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And I think David Yoder back at home preached through the Sermon on the Mount, and every message, I think, he went back to that verse. That lays the foundation for kingdom work, is to be poor in spirit. If you're not poor in spirit, you're going to be ineffective in kingdom work. In Ephesians 4, Paul is encouraging the Ephesians here, says, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with longsuffering, forbearing one another in love. This is not just for the one who is to be ordained Sunday night. This is for every one of us. Where we are called to walk in lowliness and meekness and long-suffering. As parents in the home, you have this calling. Do it with lowliness and meekness. If you're a school teacher, if you serve on the school board, whatever your role is, any kind of leadership, do it with lowliness and meekness. In Philippians 2, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. That's the mindset that we are called to embrace, the mind of Christ, a mind of humility. And so again, as we think of the heart of a shepherd, remember, we act out of who we are. A shepherd knows his flock. A good shepherd goes in front, leading the way, and a good shepherd walks with humility. I invite you to kneel in prayer.